Welcome back to Middle East Forum Radio. I'm Greg Roman with Gary Gamble here on WWDB 860 AM. Our next guest, just about to get on the line, is Joseph Heumeier, Executive Director of the Center for a Secure and Free Society, a national security think tank based in Washington, D.C. Joseph provides regular briefings and testimony to the U.S. Congress, Department of Defense, and intelligence community on Islamist terrorism, transnational organized crime, and emerging threats in Latin America. He's the author of Iran's Strategic Penetration of Latin America and a regular national security commentator for Major Strategic Penetration and Spanish language media. Joseph, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. I'm going to have Gary ask you a few questions about what's going on with Hezbollah and the recent designations in Argentina and Brazil, I think. Maybe there's other countries, Paraguay, that you were involved with. And then we'll get back to some Middle East news.
Okay.
Joseph, so you just returned from the tri-border area, right?
That's right. Yeah, I was at a conference. It actually was the first, the inaugural, what they call tri-national security conference in the tri-border. They're trying to rebrand themselves, and instead of tri-border, call themselves tri-national to focus a bit more on the cooperation of the three countries and not just the challenges.
Right. So the first issue I want to ask you about, we've been following developments in Argentina, which just distinguished itself by designating Hezbollah as a terrorist organization for the first time. But the news out of Argentina seems to suggest that the president just lost, I guess, Argentina's equivalent of a presidential primary a couple of weeks ago. And there's some question marks, are there not, as to whether he'll be reelected later this year. How much is Argentina's counterterrorism policy positioning? How much of it is the impact of just this one man, and how much of it is the impact of what we've seen over the last 10 years? In other words, is this going to last, or is it politics?
Well, so that's a really good question to start, because it's both the reason that the election that's coming up in Argentina on October 20th is both the reason why this was so urgent to get this approved and passed and signed prior to the election, but is also the challenge, which is, you know, if President Macri loses the election, this is just an executive decree, much like other executive decrees can be removed by a new executive, meaning if Macri's not the president and the new president comes in and they don't think this is a good measure, part of their executive actions, they can remove it. So let me start by saying that to get to this point was essential before the election, because, you know, given the political winds and the way things can shift in Argentina, if we did not get this executive decree signed prior to the election, it was a very small chance that it would get signed after, even if Macri got elected, just because his priorities would have shifted back towards the economy. But I should say this. Yes, it's an executive decree, so if President Fernandez wins the election, or candidate Fernandez wins the election, becomes president of Argentina, they can remove it. But the momentum's already taken off. Paraguay, for instance, just recently designated Hezbollah as a terrorist organization as well on August 9th. Brazil's considering, Colombia's considering, there's probably a handful of other countries in Latin America that are considering making this designation. So the if you want to put it maybe proverbially, the train has already left the station. So in that sense, even if Argentina reneges or the new government rescinds this executive decree, other countries in Latin America are already taking suit. So I think that was the main purpose of this.
Is that the position of the opposition, that we want to get rid of this, or...?
They haven't stated anything publicly about the decree. They've been very quiet about the whole thing. I think one of the reasons they've been very quiet was because this is the government, this is the previous government. So your listeners are clear, the candidate that's opposing Mauricio Macri in the Argentine presidential elections is Alberto Fernandez, who was the chief of staff of the former president, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner,
right,
who she is the vice presidential candidate. So she's the number two on the ticket for the Argentine elections. So this is the same people that signed the MOU with Iran to cover up their involvement in the AMI attack in the 90s.
Right.
This is
okay.
The same people that were wheeling and dealing with the Chavez government and then later the Maduro government in Venezuela. So it's very, very likely that they are going to do whatever they can to cover up Iran and Hezbollah's actions in Argentina. Even if they don't remove the decree per se, they definitely won't enforce it.
Right.
And I think that's pretty clear from their past.
Clearly, they'll be more susceptible to Iranian pressure.
Oh, I know, absolutely. I mean, not just, I don't even call it necessarily pressure as much, because Iran has a foothold within these individuals. So Iran really doesn't have to pressure much. Once they come back into the government in Argentina, Iran has a seat at the table, just like they had during their previous government under Cristina Kirchner.
Right. On a related note, I just read about this a couple of days ago and was embarrassed to say that I didn't know anything about this. But evidently, earlier this year, Panamanian President Juan Varela caused a stir by publicly promising to open a full investigation into the 1994 mid-air bombing of Flight 901, Chiricana's Flight 901, which killed 22 Panamanians, including 12 of the country's leading Jewish businessmen. And this happened on the day after the 1994 AMIA bombing in Buenos Aires, which Iran was clearly responsible for. As I understand it, there had been nothing done in Panama until this announcement, and it looks like he's walking it back or not. What's the situation there? I've heard some complaints that he's not acting on this promise.
Yeah, so this is a good thing that's often overlooked in Latin America. So in the 90s, there was actually three attacks that are suspected to be by Iran and Hezbollah. The first, obviously, in 92 against the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires. The second in 94 against the AMIA Jewish Community Center, also in Buenos Aires. And then the third, which is hardly ever referenced when you talk about these attacks, is the day after, as you mentioned, after the AMIA attack on July 19th in 1994, when they took down an aircraft that was flying from Panama that had a bunch of passengers that were from Israel and some from the Jewish community in Panama. So that attack is another an AMIA, for instance, of Panama. Has led to very much a dead end over initial investigations that really didn't provide any kind of judicial action. But there has been momentum because of all this work that's been going on in Latin America related to Hezbollah, and there have been leads that have been projected to look at that specific attack and the individuals involved in that attack and their whereabouts in the world. Now, the Panamanian government is very sensitive to this. And I'm not even sure it gets to the level of the president, because the president and the executive side of this would be handled more by the judicial side and perhaps some law enforcement officers. It's an investigative case that's ongoing. So I wouldn't be surprised if the president doesn't know much about it. Two, even if he did know about it, he had to be very sensitive, for the same reason the Paraguayans are sensitive, the Brazilians are sensitive, because there's large Lebanese communities in these specific countries
right.
that have a lot of ties to commerce and import-export businesses. So I'm pretty sure the Panamanian president's trying to walk on eggshells. But my understanding is there is some effort to advance this, even if it's not done with full coordination and probably in the best possible scenario that we would like to achieve a solution, achieve a conviction or at least an arrest. But I do understand that there is some action being taken very quietly.
Right. Didn't Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu give the president some intelligence information about this?
Yeah, he did, as well as I believe the United States also helped on some level to provide some intelligence on this. It's believed even that the individual that was involved in that attack might have surfaced at some point in Venezuela. So there were leads that were being investigated, and there were leads that were being moved upon.
Trying to get your theme music on here, but we're going to go right back to you. We had a little technical glitch. I apologize.
My apologies.
Okay, no worries. Well, I believe there's some actions that were taken both by Israel, the United States, and Panama. However, it hasn't led to anything yet, and it obviously perhaps needs to be strengthened and coordinated a bit better.
So, Joseph, I want to pivot for a second to Washington. What is the U.S. doing to convince South American countries? I mean, you pointed to some measures that they've been trying to take in terms of listing Hezbollah as a terror organization, but what are they doing to create more cleavages between Middle Eastern despots and South American governments?
Well, I think there's two things that are being done very, very pointedly. One is done to the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice created a new Hezbollah financing and narco-terrorism team that's under the leadership of John Cronin, who's the principal deputy assistant attorney general. And so they've been really engaged with half a dozen Latin American countries or more at seeking prosecutions, getting convictions, getting arrests, getting legal action taken against what they call Hezbollah facilitators, Hezbollah financiers, people that it's hard to say if they're a Hezbollah member because they're probably born in Latin America or at least have dual citizenship, but they're clearly laundering money, trafficking drugs, or doing some type of illicit activity that benefits Hezbollah in the long run. So they've been tracking, they've been clamping down on that. The designation that the Department of Justice did last year in October of 2018 to designate Hezbollah in the United States as a transnational criminal organization did a lot, because while Latin America is still very new to international terrorism, or at least they don't have that broad perspective on international terrorism, they're not new to transnational organized crime. So when you push that buzzword down in Latin America, it kind of opened up their eyes to a whole new angle on what Hezbollah is, which led to some of these actions that we've seen. The second, I'd say, is the Department of State and Department of Treasury. There's major efforts done at the highest levels, ministerial level, the whole counterterrorism summit in Latin America to get these countries together and sign resolutions and make declarations on their fight against terrorism, their fight against organized crime, and what the Department of Defense calls the convergence of the two, when these two worlds, crime and terror, come together. There's been two major summits. The first was in Washington last year in December. The second was in Buenos Aires, coincidentally with the anniversary of the AMIA attack in July of this year. And the third is going to be in Bogota next year in January. And that third one's very important because here we have 18 governments in Latin America that already signed a resolution this past July that said that they recognize that Hezbollah has a presence and activity as a terror organization in Latin America. So they've already recognized it. The next step is to get them on board and start to do something about it. So those three agencies, Treasury, State, and Justice, have done a lot by the leadership of the Trump administration to push this narrative, to explain this, and to provide more support to Latin American governments so that they can do more about it.
Big difference from the Obama administration, right? We all know about the Politico report last year that demonstrated the Obama administration was actively interfering in the ability of its investigators.
Can you walk us through Operation Cassandra?
I can't, sure, but Joseph can.
Okay.
You were looking at me, so I was like, I don't know why you're looking at me.
An Operation Cassandra was, or Project Cassandra was a project within the DEA Special Operations Division to basically look at Hezbollah's financial activity, illicit financial activity all over the world. But, you know, obviously a lot of it plugged into South America because of its ties to drug trafficking. And so they did a major arrest in 2011 of a guy named Ayman Juma, who's a Colombian Lebanese criminal that basically was doing a multi-million dollar money laundering scheme to benefit drug cartels in Mexico and Colombia, and also to benefit Hezbollah in Lebanon. The proceeds of this illicit activity, of this money laundering activity, were going straight towards Hezbollah activity in Syria and presumably maybe some of Hezbollah's activity in Iraq. And it was all done through a used car scheme. Basically, they would buy cars in Africa and they would sell them in the United States at overcharged prices. And then they would launder the illicit profits to be able to cover the drug trafficking. This all got clamped down in about 2013-14 for a myriad of reasons, funding, budget, other kinds of reasons. But according to the Politico report, largely also because of the political priorities of President Obama, who looked at once you started to unravel this onion of Hezbollah's illicit activity in Latin America, you started to realize it's not just money laundering and drug trafficking. They're also involved in terror operations. They're also involved in intelligence operations in conjunction with the Iranian embassies in Latin America. And then essentially some of the folks that were involved in this started to realize that Latin America is a very important region for Hezbollah for many reasons, not just for the financial reasons, but also because it provides them a safe zone for all their activity that they're trying to do against Israel and the United States. And that looked like if you get further along in that path that you may start to touch Iran. And obviously at the time they were negotiating the Iran nuclear deal. And that was a non-starter for the Obama administration, so they clamped down on this. So as you mentioned, the Trump administration pretty much removed that barrier and said, now we're going to take this seriously, and you can see the results.
So, Joseph, besides the policy results, what exactly is it that the Iranian regime is doing to fight back against this? I mean, we're talking about all of the ways in which the U.S. is trying to clamp down, but are the Iranians acting out in South America like they've been acting out in the Gulf?
So not directly like they do in the Middle East and in the Gulf, because obviously that's their neighborhood and they have much more control and ability to manipulate circumstances. But it's not completely indifferent to what they do in the Middle East in the sense of working with proxies. You know, if we look at what they call the land bridge, right, from Tehran to Lebanon and passing through Iraq and Syria, there's all these affiliate groups that are tied to Hezbollah and the Quds force of the IRGC that are, in some way or form, kind of doing their bidding, creating little proxy battles and skirmishes all throughout Syria and Iraq, destabilizing the area, but also providing a secure corridor so they can move weapons, arms, missile technology, procurement of all kinds of things through the Middle East, right? That's a big part of that. I think everyone in the Middle East scholars know about. But if you take that as analogous to how they operate in Latin America, it's very similar, except instead of developing a land bridge, they develop an air bridge, mostly through Venezuela in the tri-border area, to be able to do the same kind of activity they're doing in the Middle East and Latin America. But the big difference is they don't do it through Islamic outfits. In Latin America, increasingly it's becoming known that Hezbollah and Iran are working with non-Islamic elements that are pretty much just agitation and propaganda organizations that are against the United States. I'll give you an example. In Argentina, when the late prosecutor Alberto Nisman passed away, his wiretaps that he presented before the justice system in Argentina revealed a close cooperation between a group called the Quebracho in Argentina, which was nothing to do with the Iranian revolution, nothing to do with Islamism, but everything to do with anti-capitalism and anti-U.S. Sentiments in Argentina. You extend that to Peru, the Etnocaceristas, which is a separatist movement in the southern part of Peru, the Cocoleros, which is a drug trafficking unit in Bolivia, the Colectivos, which is in the news about the civilian militias in Venezuela. All these organizations that had nothing to do with the Iranian revolution on the face of it have direct ties to Tehran. And what we're thinking is that Iran building a proxy conflict in Latin America, much the same as what they're doing in the Middle East, but this one much more difficult to prove.
Right.
So beyond what they're able to do in the Middle East, whatever they're able to do in South America, where's this going? I mean, the Iranian project is being clamped by this maximum pressure sanctions campaign. They're having some of their proxies finally getting edged out of South America, or at least the declarations are being made and the legal work is being, the legal frameworks are being laid down. The tracks are being framed out to be able to kick them out of South America. 5-10 years from now, what's Iran's role in South America?
So here's what I equate it to, what, you know, I would call like a wounded dog syndrome. I think Iran is very much a wounded dog. I think not just the wounds that they receive from U.S. actions and sanctions and others, but their domestic and economic situation, political and economic situation, is detrimental to the regime. Their economy is suffering hyperinflation, and their political clout is diminishing daily. So I think Iran is definitely a wounded dog. But in that sense, you know, what does a wounded dog tend to do? They tend to bite back. And I think that's what we have to be watching out for. Where is Iran going to strike? And in the part of the world that I look at, in Latin America, I think they're preparing for that. Matter of fact, just very recently, there was an announcement in Colombia about the FARC basically deciding to return to arms. You know, they had a peace deal that they no longer are going to abide by, and they say they're going to return to arms and they're going to retake the fight against the Colombian government. Well, coincidentally, who was in Latin America at many of these meetings in Venezuela prior to this announcement? Zarif, the foreign minister of Iran, who instead of going back to Tehran when they had the incident with the vessels from the UK at the Strait of Hormuz, instead of running back to Tehran to deal with that incident, he stayed in Latin America, stayed in Venezuela, went to Bolivia, and participated in these big international socialist gatherings that one could suspect had to do something with the FARC's resurgence back in Colombia. So I think they're preparing to take the fight to the United States, but take it through unconventional asymmetric measures, narco-trafficking, terrorism, migration, and to destabilize Latin America to the point that the United States gets bogged down.
Okay, so we have a path of the way in which we're going. But do you think that if, let's say in 2020, you know, the political winds go the other way and another candidate, ostensibly from the Democrat side, takes over the White House and Trump leaves office in January of 2021, is the way in which the Democratic Party, or at least some elements, some candidates of it, look at the intersection of the Middle East and South America anathema to the policies that Trump is trying to put forward?
Well, I think it depends on the priority they put on Latin America. I mean, the Trump administration has put a tremendous amount of priority on Latin America, probably unprecedented, at least in the 21st century. You know, President Bush, I think, wanted to prioritize the region more, but he had 9/11, and obviously he had attended that. And President Obama didn't even, other than, you know, renew a relationship with our biggest adversary in Cuba, really did nothing in Latin America. So the Trump administration's done that. If the Democrats come in and they prioritize the region, I think some of the momentum's already still there. They're not going to be able to just completely pivot away from, you know, all this work that's been done over the last few years. That said, political will is important. And if the new Democrat administration, if that's what results in the election, if they do the same thing that President Obama did, which is sweep everything under the rug, basically make Iran kind of a non-factor in the conversations in Latin America, make Hezbollah a low priority, then the Latins are probably following suit. Because Latin America, as much as they are developing capabilities and growing their ability to counter these terrorist organizations and their state sponsors, they're still very new to this, and they need a lot of support. The United States' involvement, the United States' support, and I say Israel's and other allies, UK, other countries that have been helping out, is critical at this juncture. If that were to change because of a change in administration, we could go back probably to where we were before the Trump administration, which is not a good time for those that were looking at Iran and Hezbollah's presence worldwide, but also in Latin America.
Okay, Joseph, so we've got a few minutes left. Anything that CSFS is working on that our listeners should know about?
I think the main thing is that these designations of Hezbollah in Latin America, this is a long time coming. This is something that many people thought was impossible, that many people said that would never happen. The Latins just really didn't care. So this is a tremendous achievement what the President Macri did in Argentina, and I reemphasize what now President Abdo did in Paraguay on August 9th. And this is just the beginning. There's much more to come. We're looking at Colombia. We're looking at Brazil, Guatemala, Panama. There's plenty of other countries in the region that are considering this, that are looking at the political and legal path forward, and SFS is at the helm. We're working with all these governments. We're talking to them both in closed-door meetings, but also publicly to the press to make sure everyone's educated about what's exactly going on. Iran and Hezbollah is more than just a threat in the Middle East. They're a threat worldwide, and I think the Latins are starting to realize it.
So wouldn't it be so much of a far-fetched story to say that your organization is at the forefront of pushing for accountability and terror designations of Iranian proxies in South America?
That's absolutely what we're doing. We've been doing it for a long time. The difference is now we're actually getting some of the results. So,
are you concerned that your new progress is going to put a target on your back?
We've had a target on our back for a long time, so it's just going to be more of the same.
So let's get your opinion on that for a second. I mean, we have a story that came out in the Wall Street Journal last week after two entities of the Iranian government labeled a sister think, not a sister, like-minded think tank of ours.
Cousin think tank
with some former employees of the Middle East Forum and fellows, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, on a sanctions list. Iran sanctioned an American think tank. What's your take on that? I mean, is this just them blowing steam, or is this in a whole repeat of the Rushdie affair?
This is them making public what they've been doing all along. They've been targeting think tanks and non-governmental entities since the beginning because they struggle with their understanding of democracy. They really think that anything to do with policy has to be involved with the U.S. government in a direct way. They don't understand civil society. So we've been a part of that as well. I mean, in just the course of the work that we've been doing over the last 6-7 years, I've been detained in parts of Latin America. My brother was arrested in Bolivia. Our fellows have been detained and tortured. We have had threats, lawsuits from proxy governments in Latin America, including the Venezuelan government. So we've been dealing with this since the beginning. And I know, because I have good ears and eyes on the ground in Latin America, at the end of the day, this has to do 100% with Iran. Iran is looking at SFS because they believe that we are, in their view, a proxy of the U.S. government, and then they believe that, you know, obviously we're an obstacle for what they want to do in the region. But what they don't understand is that we're not controlled by the U.S. government. We're completely independently funded, and that we work, and our independence and our freedom of movement and thought is what allows us to have success, something I think Iran struggles with.
Okay, Joseph Heumeier, Executive Director of the Center for Secure and Free Society and fellow at the Middle East Forum. Thanks for joining us this morning.